We started about the international date line. Today I didn't bring a globe with me, but I brought maps. The thing is that these maps I really can't photocopy. They're really beautiful maps, but they are large. This book is a book put out by Rabbi Nachum Kosher on the, just completely only on the issue of the international date line, and it's not exhaustive. It's a good book, but it doesn't cover everything. So I wanted to show you these maps. Now the maps are in Hebrew, so you probably recognize the world, right? You see that? Okay, so the this is the where the international date line falls according to the Chazon Ish, who follows the Baal Mor, who says it's 90 degrees east of the usual line. So 90 degrees of the usual line is right here. There's a line between the pink and the green, so it's very easy to see. And as you can see, the international date line is further to the west. You see that? To the east, excuse me. You see that the international date line, that's that squiggly line, that is not the halachic international date line according to Chazon Ish, but rather the line which bisects Asia and then Australia below, parts of Indonesia, and you know, you can see the various different places which are a problem, right? So this is the, so according to Chazon Ish, all the places between the international date line as we have it and the international date line according to him, that means all of this area is going to be problematic, okay? Everything on this side has the same, the day it should have. Everything on this side has the day it should have. Everything over here is going to be a problem. Parts of Australia, New Zealand, a large tract of Siberia, Japan, of course, and parts of Indonesia, New Guinea.
I thought Alaska was in a trouble zone also.
We're getting there. Okay, that's one opinion. Okay?
You have something in non-Mercator projections?
Not on me. No, I don't have a globe. I don't have it in the other projections. Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, I know there's a problem when it's projected like this, but this is the best I could do for now. And the other approach, this approach which is, says the international day on Halachically is 180 degrees from usual line, which is the approach of Yechiel Michalski Kuczynski. No, that's not this one. This one. So his international day line is to the east of the our international day line. So he has much less, actually far fewer land masses, which are a problem, but you do have parts of Alaska, and you have Hawaii, which is, this is, one of these are Hawaii. I can't see upside down. Oh, here, up here. That's Hawaii, right there is Hawaii, okay? So there's a problem with a significant portion of Alaska and Hawaii. This is Rabbi Tukachinsky. It's attributed to many other people, but Rabbi Tukachinsky is associated with it. He says, you know, Slominski was not a rabbi, he was a scholar, and Harim Tukachinsky, the Yechiel Michalski Tukachinsky. It says 180 degrees from usual line. Okay? These are the two major opinions, 90 degrees and 180 degrees. There are other opinions. For example, another major opinion is that of Rav David Shapiro. Rav David Shapiro has the line based on his understanding of to where the sun was when it first started when the sun and the earth started revolving, whichever revolves around the other one, and the sun was hung on Wednesday, the fourth day of creation in the ninth hour of the day. So his reckoning is the last place to begin a day, that day, based on his understanding that the Garden of Eden was in India, Pakistan, Afghanistan, that general area, is that this is the line. I guess to the read, he's trying to take into account the curvature of the globe in this line. And if you see how wonderfully convenient this line is almost precisely where the actual international date line is, right? So if you take this opinion, you're in great shape, right? You have almost no issues whatsoever. Maybe there's one or two little islands which become issues, but not anything of any sizable landmass. Okay? So this is the most convenient approach to data. Although, and there's the fourth approach which you mentioned, which is the approach of the author of this book, Rabbi Kasher, and from Tzitzes HaFrank, that there is no halachic international dateline, because if there was, then the Gemara would have said explicitly, the Rambam and Shulchan Aruch would have said something about it, and they don't have anything to say about it. Okay? So these are the three approaches. So far, so good? Got that? Now, but let's go back to the Chazon Ish and work our way forward again. The Chazon Ish has a problem. Or rather, we all have a problem, which is do we actually bisect land masses or not? Because if you bisect land masses, then you actually have a very, very big problem. So the Chazon Ish comes up with this very interesting chiddush. He says that, no, you don't bisect land masses. In other words, the international dateline skirts the coastline. Even though it's a hypothetical 90-degree line away from the neutral line, it skirts the coastline of any landmass which is within the hemisphere of Yerushalayim. Because he said it's not reasonable to divide a landmass. It doesn't make sense. So therefore, the way he has it, it actually would go, not like the picture is here, but rather it would follow the contours of Asia down here, and so on and so forth. It also follows the contours of Australia, like that. Okay? Everybody see that? This New Zealand would still be a problem. Tasmania would still be a problem. New Guinea would be a problem. Parts of the Philippines would be a problem. Japan is definitely a problem. But everything else over here, all of Siberia, all the way up to Vladivostok, and all of Australia, including Melbourne and Sydney, would not be a problem. Okay? You keep Shabbos in the same as usual. Now, the Chazon-Ish, of course, has a little bit of a difficulty with this, because it comes out that the halachic international dateline of 90 degrees east of Jerusalem only exists at very few places on the globe. Right? It exists over here, at this point, over there, at that point, over here a couple of points, over here and over there. Right? So that's a little bit of difficult, because if you're going to say it's a line, it should exist to a larger extent. But the Chazon Ish says it doesn't matter. The Chazon Ish says it is a construct which is based on 90 degrees, but then how halacha is actually implemented has to be taken into account for the actual real conditions. And therefore, it follows the landmass. Now, this in of itself seems to make their life much more, much, much easier, and makes all the Jews in Australia not be mechalel Shabbos, which is a wonderful thing. But, first of all, there are those. A chief among them was the Brisker Rav. And there was a great genius called Chaim Zimmerman, who wrote a book which is in very limited circulation called Agan Hasar, which is much thicker than this book, and all about the international dateline. And it's said to be one of the hardest books of recent times to read. I think it's just because he quotes parts of stuff and doesn't explain it. So he, Rav Chaim Zimmerman, this Agan Hasar explains the same. He actually also holds, like the Brisker Rav, that it does bisect land masses. So therefore, actually, when you travel across Siberia, you should be traveling into another day, right? When you travel across Australia, you should travel into another day. So therefore, you actually become, if you're in any of these places, you can become a Chalal Shabbos, according to that. In fact, all Jews, as I said, and based on Rav Chaim Zimmerman's perspective, all Jews who live in Australia nowadays, since they all live in Melbourne and Sydney, are Mechalel Shabbos each and every Shabbos. Now, there's an interesting approach, which I think is wild and crazy, of Rabbi Sternbuch. Rabbi Sternbuch is a contemporary Rav, a big rabbi who lives in Jerusalem, and he says, look, I can't believe he actually says this, but he does. He says, look it, guys, at the time, clearly in Yerushalayim is in the northern hemisphere, right? Somebody mentioned this the other day. Yerushalayim is in the northern hemisphere. What about the southern hemisphere, right?
He says it does.
He says the Gemara only addresses the northern latitude, because that's where the hemisphere of Yerushalayim cuts both ways, right? If you cut the globe through the axis, so that the upper hemisphere is from east to west, which includes Yerushalayim, and you cut the globe the other way, north to south, there's the upper hemisphere, which holds Yerushalayim. The southern hemisphere is not the hemisphere which includes Yerushalayim. So therefore, he says like this. He says, that which the date line is 90 degrees east of Yerushalayim is only for the northern hemisphere, which is what Chazal discussed. But for the southern hemisphere, we're free to make it wherever we want. Or actually, we should make it not wherever we want. He says, we should make it, take into account not just the settled area of that period, but the totality of the globe. So he says, in the southern hemisphere, it's 180 degrees. So he actually wants to say, I don't think he means this seriously, but he wants to say that the line goes like this to the equator, and it goes straight out on the equator for the quarter of the globe, 90 degrees, and then goes straight down from there, which is also very convenient.
So for them, north to south, the time is exactly the same, but you're going to a different day.
Right. There'd be actually a north-south line as well. Yes.
I'm not sure if it's true that he's right or that he's wrong, but so in the southern hemisphere, people actually keep, like the Torah says, you have to keep things in its season, so they actually keep it in the fall, don't they?
Mm-hmm. For sure. Yeah.
So how does that play into what you're saying?
Well, it's an interesting point, which actually has to do with Mashi Baruch Merid HaGeshem, the same Talmud for Rizrocha. Because obviously they're saying Mashi Baruch Merid HaGeshem, the same Talmud for Rizrocha, they follow the northern hemisphere, they're saying it's in the middle of their summer, right? Which is not the appropriate season for it. So the question is, if you live in Australia or anywhere in the southern hemisphere, right? Live in Argentina, so then what do you do there? So actually, or South Africa, wherever you are, so actually, Halacha L'maaseh, it's a big question. Halacha L'maaseh, they follow the northern hemisphere, even though it doesn't seem to be rational that they follow the northern hemisphere. And if they want to ask for rain in the winter, they do it in Shomer Tfilah, right? So in the winter, in their winter, they're saying the same bracha and Bolid HaKol, or nothing at all, depending on the minute. Yeah, if they want to ask for rain, they have to ask for rain elsewhere in Shmoneh Esrei. So according to that, but there's an argument about it. So you, according to the opinion that the southern hemisphere is halachically independent, I don't remember who owes what. And in the southern hemisphere, you could say the same time Moshe Baruch and Mashi Baruch and Rida Geshem in their winter. So perhaps the dateline also could be, you know, independent, like Rabbi Sternberg claims, of the northern hemisphere. But we hold actually that the southern hemisphere, by the primary opinion, is that the southern hemisphere does follow the northern hemisphere, right? And therefore, since the southern hemisphere follows the northern hemisphere, I would say, and the dateline also follows the northern hemisphere. Okay, that would be my impression. Not like Rabbi Sternbach. But I don't think Rabbi Sternbach means it seriously, as I said. But he raises a lot of questions. He says, you know, look, let's assume the Chazon Ish is right. But what happens, according to Chazon Ish, if you are swimming off the coast of Sydney on Shabbos, right? You go to the beach, assuming there's a separate swimming beach. You go to the beach in Sydney, Australia, or Melbourne, Australia, right? Which they're both on the water, I believe. And you start swimming. And it's Sunday. What day are you swimming into? Shabbos. You understand that? Because over here, going to Chazon Ish, right? Remember, here it's a day later on in the pink side, it's a day later than the green side, right? So if it's Sunday over here, it's Shabbos over here. Okay, so skirts the landmass. What happens is you're Sunday and you take a boat trip. Or you go swimming off the coast. You're going back into Shabbos. Because the line is at the coastline. What happens if you are flying on Sunday? Right? The moment you get above 10 fucking off the ground, which is the limit, we would assume, of, airspace in halacha, about 40 inches off the ground. The moment you're above that, so then you're back in Shabbos again, right? Something they ban smoking on flights nowadays. Somebody smoked at that point. You're doing Mechal Shabbos again, right? It's interesting. Once you're in the plane, there's not that much prohibited to do. Of course, you can't turn on your lights, turn it off, right? You can't actually adjust the volume if you want to listen to the movie. What? You can't lock the bathroom. That's true. That is a problem. You can't lock the bathroom door because it has a light on it. Very good point. So there are pockets which are involved in flying on Sunday. Very practical weapons. I didn't even think of that. Okay?
Hey, Wendy, you can't carry your bags?
Right, well, when you land, it's a whole separate issue. I mean, hopefully you'll arrange your flight that by the time you get back to America, wherever you're going, it's already going to be Sunday. But because I've heard of a story, which is, of course, possible, where a guy took off from Japan, and he was following the regular secular deadline. Took off on Japan the day after Yom Kippur. He landed in Seattle on Yom Kippur. So what does he do, right? He didn't have questions. When does he have to begin fasting? Also, you know, so he's traveling over the line. At that point, does he have to start fasting? Right. So that's, you know, he eats.
Again.
What? Again. Right. Right.
Wait. You were living. Let's say if we're going by all opinions, so like a quarter of the world, right, is questionable. You're living on the red side of the day earlier, right? So,
no, that's
a day later. So let's say you're living on the green side, so like a quarter, like you're living in California, let's say, and it's, you know, and it's like 4 hours till Yom Kippur. You can actually take a super fast plane, fly a quarter of the world, land in Western Australia, and then Yom Kippur's ending, and then you can skip celebrating Yom Kippur that way, wouldn't you?
Could be, yeah.
So then you just went and celebrate Yom Kippur that day, that year. And then if you plan your flight right, you'd only have to celebrate one day when you went back.
Yeah. Yes. I guarantee you, if a person actually planned that, not only would he not achieve atonement for that year, but when he died and got to hell, they would roast him all the more. So therefore, it's not probably not a good idea to try and avoid Yom Kippur altogether.
But you could celebrate for 3 days, too.
What?
You could celebrate.
Yeah, you could do lots of stuff. If you have the right airplane, flying at the right speed, so you have lots of possibilities exist. So, again, this is a problem going to the Chazon Ish, and the Chazon Ish says it skirts the land masses. But the question is, then what happens if you get off the land mass? So, in fact, Rabbi Sternbach wants to say that maybe, but this is purely a svara. It's a good svara. I like it. Don't get me wrong. But it's hard to accept it as a svara. He wants to say you go by the westernmost tall point in Australia, and you draw a line up and down, right, for Australia. And then, let's say, by Russia, you do the same thing. You draw a line up and down. But that merely means that when you don't avoid the question forever. It means when you swim off the most eastern point in Australia, right there, again, you have the same question. So it just makes it a little bit easier for you, but not really completely. Yes?
What about oceanic currents and coastal currents that are pushing you towards the dateline or away from the dateline in the first place?
Why would they have an effect?
Well, if they're circulating in such a way that, I mean, let's say you're out almost near one of the datelines, and you have a coastal current or a oceanic current pushing you in some way, even if you try swimming back or something, you're putting yourself in a position to...
So you did that unintentionally. It's unintentional.
Even if you know the currents exist.
Well, I don't know. If you knew the currents exist and you went to boating there anyway, then we will stone you. Yeah. that's called intentional. Okay. Now, there are... Yeah.
Another question. I'm sure we'll get into this, but let's say it does go through a landmass. Let's say this is the line. If I stand with my right foot here, my left foot here, do I have to keep Shabbos? If one day is Shabbos, one day is not. If I'm standing on both sides at the same time, what am I alive?
That's a good question. I imagine that once you're a little bit in Shabbos, it's like you're all in Shabbos. That's my understanding. What? No, Sukkot has the most. I think Shabbos even a little bit.
Right.
Yeah, I don't think that's I would say even a little bit of Shabbos. A little bit of Shabbos is a very Shabbos. So that's my impression, but it might
be
the
right.
No.
Do you carry from...
Well, you have Eruv.
You can have Eruv along the dateline,
yeah.
And you carry from Shabbos and not Shabbos.
Okay, so there are all sorts of... right, if by tech and land masses, you'd have all sorts of interest with them. So now, people, according to Chazon-ish, people live in Australia should keep Shabbos on Shabbos on Saturday. People live in New Zealand, however, since they're on this side of the Chazon Ish dateline, but this side of the international dateline, what day should they keep Shabbos?
Well,
Sunday. They should keep Shabbos on Sunday, according to the Chazon Ish.
On secular Sunday.
On secular Sunday. Again, because they begin, according to the secular dateline, which determines the date of the day, they began Sunday already, before it actually became Shabbos by then, right? So therefore, they have to keep, again, this is the divide, but is Shabbos Sunday, if you go by the second line, but according to us, it should be no, Shabbos Sunday, right? So with their calling Sunday, they actually should call Shabbos. The same thing in Japan. What they call Sunday should actually keep called Shabbos. Conversely, according to Rabbi Sukachinsky. Yes. Conversely, according to Rabbi Sukachinsky, let's say you're in Hawaii. So what day would you celebrate Shabbos according to Rabbi Sukachinsky? What? According to Rabbi Sukachinsky, not according to Chazon Ish. Look at this map.
Where's Hawaii?
Hawaii's over here.
You would think so.
Oh, right, right,
So what day would you keep Shabbos in Hawaii?
Friday.
Because it's they think that they're on the same day of Friday dayline as us, and that their Shabbos is our Shabbos. They know. They are on the they are should be on the other side of the dayline. And therefore, what is Friday is already Shabbos for them. They should be keeping Shabbos on Friday. Now, according to Chazon Ish, what do you do in these situations? So what you have to do is you have to take into account what the both opinions. You have to take into account the Chazon Ish, and you have to take into account the fact that in that place they call that day Saturday. So according to Chazon Ish, you would refrain from doing Melachos D'oraisa and the Rabbanan on whatever day is really Shabbos, according to Chazon Ish. Meaning, it could be Sunday, could be Friday. It could be Shabbos, but it could be Sunday or Friday. And you actually make Kiddush on that day and daven Shabbos Tefillos on that day. The other day, however, which day in that location called Saturday, you also have to refrain from doing Melachos, at least Melachos D'oraisa, right? But you don't daven a Shabbos davening. You daven a weekday davening. So you take upon yourself the chumrah of the place to which you're going, besides the actual halacha, that's the Chazon Ish holds. Okay?
For that when people see you as a Jew on Saturday, they see that you're keeping Shabbos?
Right, so you wear Shabbos clothes, right. Even though you're making Kiddush another day.
So it's for
public policy reasons, right. Okay, so there, so you, again, you refrain from overt halacha, and you would wear Shabbos clothes, but you wouldn't actually have to, refrain from the law, so the Rabbanon. Why is that? Because even when you're a doubt, you're supposed to be machmir on the righteous. When you're a doubt, you could be on Torah law. But when you're a doubt, you can be lenient on rabbinic law, right? So therefore, the Chazon Ish says, you know, it's really you should be machmir the righteous, not necessarily the Rabbanon. And as a result, also, you should wear the Shabbos clothes, but you should not wear the Shabbos. In 1 second. So this became a major issue, going back to the Chazon Ish. Oh, before we go back to Chazon Ish. So what does Rabbi Sukachinsky do with landmasses? Right? He only has one. He only has Alaska. The rest are islands. So what does he do with the landmasses? So Rabbi Sukachinsky says Alaska is part of America. But he says an interesting reason why, which we now know is not true. He says the reason why Alaska should be like America is because he assumes the first settlers who came to Alaska came like this. And they brought Shabbos with them. So therefore, they, by coming here, extended the line in this direction to include Alaska.
That's true for Jews, though.
What?
It's not true for the original people there, but it's true for Jews, isn't it? I mean, I don't mean Jews. Over the land bridge?
I don't know, but he said the first people. Let's see the first Jews.
First
people who came there kept they determined what Saturday was. So now we now assume that they came over from the Bering, what's now the Bering Strait, in which case the Chazon Ish's logic would not hold. I mean, but the Kuczynski's logic would not hold. Now you could say, also according to the Kuczynski, that it's Gertz landmasses, like the Chazon Ish said. But the Chazon Ish's far that it's Gertz landmasses is that any landmass which makes it in to the hemisphere of Yerushalayim should be completely follow the hemisphere of Yerushalayim, right? So based on that logic, in fact, according to Chazon Ish, what you should do, if you use the Chazon Ish's Torah on North America, you put all of North America on this side of the line, according to Rabbi Sukachinsky. That's clearly untenable. You can't really do that. So therefore, you know, the question is what you would do over here, according to Rabbi Sukachinsky, in that part of Alaska, and that is where Anchorage and Juneau are, so those Jews might be Mechallel Shabbos. What Rabbi Kuczynski do? Okay. So everybody has a chance to do Chol Shabbos. A lot of people have a chance to do Chol Shabbos. Now, what do people actually do? Unfortunately, people, in my opinion, I think the Chazanish is right. Let me make that clear. In my opinion, the Chazanish is right. Why? Because the only Rishonim who weigh in explicitly about this issue are the ones who say that it is specifically at 90 degrees east of Yerushalayim. There are no Rishonim who say 180 degrees east of Yerushalayim. There's an argument about one Rishon, maybe he says it, but it's certainly not explicit. So therefore, since that is the case, halachically, in halachic practice, generally we follow Rishonim, right, the medieval scholars, when they exist, when they weigh in on an issue. When they don't exist, we have more latitude. But when they do exist, we have to follow them. So that would be, but that's what the Chazanish actually said. He says, look, you have two Rishonim who say this, the Kuzarim Baal Amor, you got to follow them. The logic of the other position is, as I mentioned yesterday to somebody privately, is that Torah, that the Rishonim by which we are bound halakhically are the major ones. The Rambam, the Rish, the Rosh, that's the first tier, right? Rashi and Tosfos would be included there. The second tier would be the Ramban, the Rashba, the Ritva, the Ran. That would be the second tier of Rishonim. The third tier of Rishonim includes the Kuzari and Baal Amor and others, and we're not required to follow them in Halacha, which is something which I actually heard from Rabban Soloveitchik when I asked him about this, because he actually holds like Rabbi Tukachinsky, and therefore he has told people to keep Friday as Shabbos in Hawaii, right, because according to Rabbi Tukachinsky, Shabbos is on Friday. I don't know if people ask about Alaska. I don't think he thinks it's like as Ryan Matthews would. For whatever reason, it doesn't bite him. He said
that he's not required to learn like those Rishonim. Now, why not? A, because they're not the major Rishonim, but B, this is also important part of it, because the major Rishonim, at least some of them, have a different understanding of the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, which we saw. They don't explain it based on the 90 degrees of logic. Now, what most of them say is something that is difficult for us to understand. It's very hard to learn Rashi and Tosfos on that and understand what Rashi and Tosfos are saying. It's very difficult. But according to Rabbi Soloveitchik, he said to me, listen, it's true, it's difficult to understand, but we know they didn't learn like the Kuzarim Baal Amor. So therefore, since they didn't learn like the Kuzarim Baal Amor, we're not required to follow the Kuzarim Baal Amor. Again, they are not the major Rishonim. B, the major Rishonim didn't learn the Sugya that way. Now the thing is that, that's true, they didn't learn the Sugya that way, but they didn't argue explicitly on Kuzarim Baal Amor. Also, the Ritva, who is at least the second Talmud show, says that does learn like the Baal Amor that it's 90 degrees east of Yerushalayim, and so therefore the Chazanish seems to be the at least I shouldn't say seems to be seems to me to be the dominant opinion. Yeah.
What about the Garden of Eden being the center of the palace? Like, who came up with that?
It's Rabbi Zvi Shapiro.
What
was that? That was also in the 40s. The problem is that Rabbi Kosher actually has a chart here at the beginning, which he says he discounts Rabbi Shapiro's approach, because he says there actually are, if you look at this, I don't really understand this by looking at it, but there are a lot of sons here. These are multiple sons. Now, not that the earth has more than one sun, but these, he says that one could understand that the sun was hung on Wednesday in any one of these positions. That there's different Rishonim who say different places. Because after all, first of all, we're not sure that the Garden of Eden was actually in Pakistan. You know, so, and therefore, we don't know exactly where to put it. So therefore, there are all sorts of different opinions as to where to place it. Also, it doesn't say anywhere, I think, explicitly in the Gemara, that where the sun, what time the sun was hung in the sky. I think it's from the Medrash. And I guess, you know, there are maybe a different midrashim, I don't recall, I'm sure he says in the book, there's a different midrashim about it. So, as I said, in the, at the beginning of this discussion. In the Second World War, this became a major issue because there were Jews, God-fearing, Yom Kippur-keeping Jews in Japan in 1941. Now, there were Jews in Japan before that, but obviously they didn't raise the question. But that year they raised the question, what to do, okay? So, actually, he has a picture here. The telegram to, I don't know what NLC means, Rabbi Mishkowski, Alter, Herzog, Soloveitchik, Finkel, to be Meltzer, Hornstein, these are all the big rabbis in Jerusalem. Jews appeal, rescue, answer immediately. Which date to fast Yom Kippur? Okay? Mm-hmm. So this came, Union of Rabbis and something Balabatim. Oh, Kobe Balabatim it should be, because Kobe is in Japan, that's where it was. And this was received on the 12th of September, 1941. That's when they asked the question. So all these rabbis got together, right? And they said, invitation sent by the chief rabbi, Rabbi Herzog, to everybody to get together in his house to discuss the issue. We all came together, and they sent back the following telegram. In reply to your cable, by the way, at that point, since it was before Pearl Harbor, so Japan and Britain were not yet at war. So actually that's why telegrams could go back and forth from Palestine to Japan. A couple of months later, that was that. They couldn't do it anymore. During the Second World War, the way money, after Pearl Harbor, the way money was transferred to the Jews in Japan, or China, which was occupied by Japan, was through Sweden. So it was a point man in Sweden, Rabbi Volbeck, who's still alive today, a great Baal Moshe Yerushalayim, who was the point man for funds for the yeshiva, students in Shanghai, and he actually transferred funds, laundered them, so to speak, from America through Sweden, which was a neutral country, and over to Japan. Okay, so he says he in reply or cabled 12/9 to September 12th, the British style, meeting rabbis, my presidency, decided you fast Wednesday, Yom Kippur, according to the counting the days of the week current in Japan. Stop. On my part, I add, none dare risk danger by fasting also Thursday, but should eat that day according to the Chaim section 618, paragraphs 7 and 8. Chief Rabbi Herzog. Okay? That's what he sent back. However, the Chazon Ish sent back a very famous telegram.
So does that mean they fast on the day that
the Japanese would be fasting, right? So which is Wednesday. So he said the Chazon sent back a full, I don't know what it was in English or how what telegram, but he's probably written it down somewhere. The Chazon's famous line was Ichru Ri Sumu Bachamishi. Eat on Wednesday and fast on Thursday, right? Now, you have to understand who the Chazon Ish was. These were a lot of heavy guns in this group of rabbis to which the question was asked. But the Chazon Ish, the Chazon Ish, you know, he was so brilliant, in Halacha particularly, that, you know, his word carried more weight with the yeshiva guys in Japan and all the other rabbis combined. Now, it's because already in Lithuania, before he went to Eretz Yisrael, he was known as a tremendous potentate. And in fact, when I once asked my great uncle, who was in Japan that year, what they did, so he said, most of the people fasted according to the Chazon Ish's opinion, which was the fast on Thursday. And they tried on Wednesday to eat less than a shear each time, right? Because if you eat less than the size of a date, 6 days, every 9 minutes, then you don't technically violate Yom Kippur, right? Because you ate less than the amount, which is considered sort of restorative, so therefore you're still afflicting yourself, and that is actually what they would do on Wednesday in order not
technically demoralize Yom Kippur by not eating so much at one time. There were a few people who fasted actually both days, 48 hours straight, which is pretty amazing. I saw it in Shulchan Aruch recently. Shulchan Aruch said, what?
And they dominated.
That I can't tell you. No, they could not both days, so Yom Kippur died. But the Shulchan Aruch I recently said, if you fast 48 hours in a row, it counts as 40 fasts. 40 single day fasts.
So if you double
stick
the Torah,
God forbid,
and then
you have
48 hours in a row?
Yeah, it's a misnomer, actually. You don't actually have to fast 40 days. It's a misunderstanding. You only have to fast one day to see for circle. Not really 40 days.
What?
You see a circle, you only have to fast one day. Yeah.
Isn't there a problem? I mean, if you pose a question to urban community that you're a part of, pose a question to a group, and they get one answer, and an individual gets another, don't you have an obligation to follow the
rules? I don't know if that's a telegram. Obviously, the people who sent the telegram to these rabbis were following these rabbis, but I'm telling you what most people did. Some say the telegram is unsigned. The overwhelming majority of people in Japan that year actually get the combinations approach. I'm sure whoever sent the telegram did keep, you know, this approach of Kuczynski at all, that it was that in Japan, the halacha is that you follow the day that it is in Japan. But again, most people there, in fact, follow the Kazanish's opinion on this matter. So until this very day, if you travel to Japan, you have this question. And according to Kazanish, you will keep Shabbos on Sunday. You would not keep Shabbos on the day they call Saturday, and so on and so forth. So that's one issue which arises with the deadline when to keep Shabbos. And this arises also, as I said, when you're in flight or in transit from one side of the world to the other. You have to find whenever you cross the line. Okay. Now the question is when you cross the line. Let's leave Shabbos alone for a minute. The question is when you cross the line, you have to daven again. In other words, let's say you already davened mincha, right? And then you cross the line, whichever line you hold is the line. The halachic line of 90, the halachic line of 180, the halachic line of the line of the secular line, you pass over it. You already davened mincha. Now you have to daven mincha again. Yeah. But you're just passing Tuesday into Wednesday. You have to have a mincha or from Wednesday back into Tuesday.
I would say yes, but not the other way around. Like if you go from Wednesday to Tuesday, I don't think you would have to because you already did Tuesday yesterday.
Yeah, well, maybe
you're Tuesday to Wednesday.
Maybe you don't have any tefillos for the next 24 hours since you're ready for Yosei, all Tuesday tefillos at that point, right?
Where's the obligation?
What?
From the person around the
day. So the obligation the obligation is on the person based on the sunrise to sunset day. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't actually follow the date or day of the week. That if you pass, even though you might actually have luckily be passing from one day of the week to the other day or to another day of the week, nevertheless, for you, in terms of your kilos, in terms of everything which has to do with day and night, you follow your sunrise to your sunset, your sunrise to your sunset, right? The only time this comes to town, actually, is if you were flying in this way, you're following the sun, right? So you're following the sun. The only way it would be a problem is if you went actually the other direction, be more of a problem. If you travel from east to west, from west to east, very fast, so it's conceivable that within less than 24 hours you would have two sunrises. Is that not correct?
Yeah.
Right, so that's the question. If you actually travel from east to west very quickly, let's say you left, you left at 9 o'clock in the morning, right? And you flew very, very quickly, faster than the sun goes around the earth, and you came out to the other side, so you come out less than...
I'm not sure I'm right about this.
Here's the earth, right? So here the sun is going from east to west. So you left here, whatever time, and then you're going around this way. So you're going to meet the sun actually earlier, right? You left just past the sunrise here, you're going to come to sunrise, and you're flying very, very quickly before it's 25 hours left.
The sun sets when you start going that way.
Right, sun sets you very quickly and rises again very quickly.
Right.
So, for example, so then we pass in that situation that you follow again whatever sunrise and sunset is. Sunrise, sunset, sunrise, sunset. You always follow it as it passes over you. Which is why, when you travel from here to Israel,
even though the night is much shorter than a normal night, right? Because you are you're traveling towards the sun, right? The sun and you are meeting, so it's coming much earlier, right? Nevertheless, you dive in chakras based on when sunrise occurs when you're on the airplane, right? Even though for you only your night only that night consists of 3-4 hours, whatever it is. Nevertheless, you have to dive in chakras based on when the sun rises, not on when your biological clock tells you that it's actually morning.
So that's on Gemini. Space shuttle.
What?
I mean, you could take this up another notch because if you're saying you're travel fast and then you see another sunrise, but that counts as the need to dive in again. But you know, you can increase your speed a lot, and like for instance, in a space shuttle. And they see a sunrise every, I don't know, some very short amount of time they see a sunrise or a sunset. So in that case, it gets to constellate the comet.
As long as you're in Earth's orbit, yeah.
Right. It's too hard for it.
Yeah. The problem is how you determine Chappis under such circumstances. Very difficult to understand when Chappis begins and Chappis ends based on that. Now that's what we mentioned the other day. Now another question, very interesting question, which arises, is the question of Sfirat HaOmer. Right, Sfirat HaOmer, you count 50 days between, 49 days and then the Shavuot, the 50th day, between Pesach and Shavuot. Right? So you pass, what happens if you pass over the date line in the middle between Pesach and Shavuot? Let's say you're flying from New York to Melbourne. Right? So you left New York on what is now day 26. Right? You counted 26, just arbitrarily. Counted that night 26. When you pass over the date line, you're passing over to 27. And that night when you land in Melbourne, you would like to count 27. But actually for them, it's already going to be 28. You get that? Okay. You pass over in the middle, you pass over, you lost the day, and now it's 28 over there. Conversely, the other way around. You left Melbourne on day 26. You get to New York, right? And you want to count that night 27, but for them, since it's a day behind, they're counting 26. Right? So what do you do? So, there's two opinions. Lubavitch Rebbe had a remarkable and unique opinion, which Lubavitch Chassidim obviously take into account, which is that you continue your counts independently of all the people around you. And you end up keeping Shavuos, actually, on a different day, and the people around you keep Shavuos. Because it says, so Sparkin Lochem, each person counts for themselves, every man for themselves. So each person counts for themselves, so therefore, you make sure it's according to your account. So therefore, if you flew from New York to Melbourne, you make sure a day later than everybody else. If you flew from Melbourne to New York, you make sure a day earlier than everybody else. That's a whole case, you know, because of course, you know, you have to keep the day which they're keeping there too. So when you dive in Shavuot diving, when you dive in weekday diving, so basically you end up with 3 days Shavuot, right? Not 2 days, but 3 days, because you have to take into account the day which is happening there, the day which overlaps, and your own day. That's the Lubavitcher Rebbe's opinion. Yeah.
Did you believe it? Did you count one day?
What?
Did you
good question. Went Lubavitcher. But as you forgot. But that means, according to him, I guess you lose the midst of counting, but you still continue your own count.
Even your own
count. Yeah. That's, I assume that that's what he would say. The interesting thing about that is that Lubavitcher is therefore, if let's say Lubavitcher would want to come from Australia to Crown Heights during Sfirat HaOmer because of the Rebbe's spot, they go the long way around. They don't cross the line, right? They go long way around from the from one way, which is a very long trip. The thing, or theoretically, going to Rebbe, if you went back and forth, it would even out, right? If you hopped from Australia to New York and back again during Sfirat, or conversely from New York to Australia and back, then everything would even out in the end. But the because you go back to the original count, which is in accordance with that location. Most folks don't hold that way. Most folks can hold, even though mitzvah and Sfirat HaOmer is your own individual mitzvah. Nevertheless, despite that, you actually have to follow Shavuos based on the place where you are. Because obviously, it's not possible an individual to determine a yontif. It's the Jewish people that determine the yontif. And the Jewish people in each and every location, they determine the yontif when they make the yontif. And they say, the other poskim, that what happens if you cross the date line? Right, it's either you lose your count. You can't count anymore as a bracha. By definition, once you pass over the date line, you're messed up. because you can't make your own state independent of the people who are there, and therefore for the way you will have to skip a day or go back a day, but you won't be able to count with the bracha from there on.
Christian, when you're saying that, if you skip over the date line, you'll say you go forward a day or back a day, whichever, and you already dialed in Minchah, so you don't need to dial in again because you're going by the sun and the setting. So now, if you're in a plane on Sunday, and you daven weekday Mincha on Sunday, and then half an hour after that, you cross over into Shabbos, then, even though you already daven Mincha, you daven a wrong Mincha for Shabbos, but then would you be okay?
You wouldn't have to daven again. Were you to daven again, you daven Shabbos davening. Are you ready for your Mincha for that day, so you don't have to daven again?
Would you daven Shabbos davening, or would you go by the sun rising?
No, you go by where will you be.
So the date goes by the sun, by the calendar, but the davening goes by
the location where you are. Because that halachic day from sunrise to sunset, you already daven Mincha, and in the location where you daven the right tefillah. That's all you need to do? Yeah.
I imagine this could happen. If you leave Seattle just before sunset and fly to a northern European country, which is going to probably take a polar route, meaning you would not see the sunset at all that day. You're in your destination in the middle of the next day, and you would never have seen the sunset. So would you just not be married on that
day? Yeah, of course. When's the marriage? How could you be married? Absolutely. Yeah, middle of the summer, you're saying, when the sun doesn't set. Yeah, you would not be able to have Mars. No.
Wow.
You're not required to. You're not higher than Shema under those circumstances. You're only supposed to make Shema. No, but it means the night, right?
Yeah.
You're only supposed to say Shema if you're at night, and that's night, not night time.
But if you go to sleep
in the
tank, doesn't that sort of obvious
or not? Like a nap. Doesn't make a difference.
Well, if you just chase them, then it's
like a tough breeze. Okay, everybody, so we'll stop here. I think we more or less covered the topic, so maybe we'll start a new topic next week, unless I remember there's something.
Can we talk about the Hebrew script we use versus the ancient script and the different ideas about which came first?
You want to talk about
it? Which and
fine.
What?
Hebrew script?
No problem. There's an interesting essay in the back of my book about that.